Hey, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. It's about 7 past the hour. This hour is and will be sponsored by Lauren Coodley, whose message, "We love you, Mike. Thanks for seeking the truth for us," signed Gray and Lauren. Thanks, Lauren. Thanks for the sponsorship. Thanks for the sentiment. Okay. I have to mention it, of course. The killing of Muammar Gaddafi today. There seems to be a disagreement as to whether or not he was killed in a NATO airstrike, or wounded in a NATO airstrike, and then dragged from his car, beaten and executed, or wounded in the NATO airstrike, crawled from his car, hid in a drainage pipe, and then was discovered by the rebels, dragged out, beaten, and killed. How about those pictures? How about the video? It was, I had the damnedest experience tonight. Like every parent, I try to shield Molly from as much as I can. She's 7 years old. And just let her in on the world's atrocities very, very, very gently, slowly. She's not allowed to watch television unless she's watching a movie. We only started that about 3-4 months ago when it occurred to me that this was not good, not good at all. So we stopped it. Surprisingly, there was very little resistance from Molly. First day, "You mean never again in my life?" No. You know, at some point, Molly, just not now. But we're sitting at the dinner table. Kathy had a meeting tonight. We're sitting at the dinner table after we finished dinner, Molly and me. And she's got a couple of math problems left to do. So we clear the table, and we're sitting there. Now, we're having dinner in the kitchen, and over on a sideboard, we have a small television, little tiny flat-screen TV that sits out there in the kitchen. So in the morning, when I'm fixing her breakfast, Kathy takes her to school, I fix her breakfast, yada, yada, yada. But when I'm fixing her breakfast, and she hasn't downstairs yet, she's upstairs getting dressed or brushing her teeth, I can watch the local news and the weather and the traffic and so on and so forth. You know, you probably do that too, right? So the television is over there. Molly, this is supper, after supper tonight. Molly's sitting at the kitchen table finishing up her math problem. And it's a little bit later than normal, so I've got the NBC Nightly News on. And the sound is up just a little bit. And I'm listening to the Brian Williams and his correspondence reports on the death of Gaddafi. And Molly's doing her math, not paying the least bit of attention to this. And the video comes on of this bloodied body. And the voiceover or the reporter describing it is pretty graphic, almost as graphic as the video. And finally, after the first 5 or 6 minutes, I guess that was the lead story. They switch over to something else, and Molly lays her pencil down, and she says, "Why did they kill that man?" And, stupid me, a kid is like a sponge. You know, you may think that they're not absorbing. It's been a long time since I've had a 7-year-old. I forgot that part. So I had to very quickly give her an explanation that would fit into her worldview of right and wrong, proper and improper behavior, and why people would be talking about killing someone else in such a gleeful, and it was gleeful, relieved, kind of manner. And it was kind of difficult. And, you know, my rule with a kid, it's not my rule, it's what I've learned, you only answer the question they ask. unlike talk radio, you know, I'm not this wordy with Molly, trust me. If she asks me a question, I will give her the briefest answer, especially if it's a subject that I'm not sure if she's emotionally or intellectually ready to handle. If she asks me a question, I will give her as much of an answer as I think gets right to her question and no more. You know, that's a rule. I don't know, Chaim Gnat or somebody came up with that. On when you're raising a kid, you know, just answer what they ask. don't give a great big explanation, because you get into territory the kid probably can't handle. So, plus you lose their, you know, they don't have that much attention span. But I tried to explain to her why this man had been tracked down, and in the explanation, because she heard that he had been beaten and shot in the head by the people who caught him. And I'm glad she didn't see the video with the bullet hole in his head that NBC chose to broadcast. Al Jazeera broadcast it. ABC broadcast it. I don't know about CBS. CNN broadcast it. MSNBC broadcast it. I don't understand. You know, camera phone videos that were taken by the people who had caught him. But why it's necessary to show that, I don't know. I'm sure there's a reason to show that on American television, on any television. I'm sure that the people in Lockerbie, Scotland, were relieved to see it. The 113 Americans who died in the crash or the explosion on the Pan Am jet. I'm sure that they were relieved to see. I'm not sure. I'm just guessing. And the whole thing, of course, just creeped me out completely. There was a time, wasn't there? Was it that long ago when that sort of thing might be discussed in the next day's newspaper? And there might be a black and white photo of a corpse battered and beaten and bloody with a bullet hole in the head. And, you know, given Gaddafi's history of 40-plus years in Libya, I guess that a celebratory nod toward his death would be appropriate, maybe. But, you know, maybe quietly while you're drinking your morning coffee. Now, I'm not, I don't know where I'm going with this, except to just wonder how this affected other people. I saw the video display of his battered and bloodied body being beaten even further, and then I didn't see the actual bullet go into his head, but, why is it necessary to show us that? And what is gained by seeing that? As much as I thought Gaddafi was a tyrant to his own people and probably a terrorist where it concerned blowing up a nightclub in Berlin or blowing up a passenger jet in the sky or other things that he had been accused of. Or his henchmen have been accused of. How do you not feel a sense of relief? I guess is that what we're supposed to feel? But what about what about Elliot Abrams or Henry Kissinger or George W. Bush, or Ronald Reagan keep going, Nixon or Johnson or whomever. I'm caught. I know I should be standing and cheering along with most people tonight in the good old United States about the death of yet one more tyrant. But I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure. It'll be, no pun intended, a dead story by tomorrow morning. I heard that.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
We never relaxing. Outcast is everlasting. Not clashing, not at all. But see, my went to do a little acting. Now that's for anyone asking. Give me one to pass them. Drip, drip, drop. There it goes an orgasm. Now you coming out the side of your face. You tapping right into your memory bank. Thanks. So click at the ticket. Let's see your seatbelt fastened.
It is 21 past the hour. Oh, tomorrow. You know what tomorrow is, right? Or don't you? Right, you? Still a bit dizzy from the... from the videos and the reports today, somebody in the chat room, the Ustream chat room, Morpheus Dreamer writes, "I'm thrilled for the Libyan rebels and people, the Libyan people, that they won, their hard-fought freedom. I'm not wired to take any joy in seeing a fellow human's death. The pictures made me feel sorry for another human being." Isn't that, you know, that's what I was feeling today. And just, you know, you get that conflict set up in your head. You know, or you've been told, or there is proof or something that this man was a real son of a bitch by our standards. I guess by most of the world's standards. But the glee, I guess the people in Libya certainly have a right to feel whatever they want to feel about ending this person's life. But I don't know, the Americans, the diplomats and the broadcast people, and I don't know, it just didn't quite sit right. You know what I'm saying? Okay, I'm going to leave it go. I'm going to let it go. I'm going to let it go. You remember Harold Camping, the guy who said the world was going to, when was that, Kathy, back in, was it September? Well, you know, tomorrow's the new day, tomorrow. Yeah, October, what is tomorrow? October 21st. Yeah. And the apocalypse is occurring tomorrow, only this time Harold's apparently had a marketing person, you know, one of these Christian freakoid marketers talk to him and say, "Look, Harold, phew, phew, look, this, you know, you can turn this into a real moneymaker, man. And really, you can do this every 6 months. But what you have to do is play down the violent part of it. You know, don't tell people they're going to, all their clothes are going to fall away and they're going to fly up into space. don't do that, because that just, you know, that's just going to appeal to the nutcases. Oh, that's right, Harold. We know you're a nutcase too. But I mean, you know, there's no profit in that. And that's what we're all in this for, is profit, right? Harold, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. So here's what you have to do. Try telling people that the apocalypse, for sure, is tomorrow, but it will be unnoticeable. It'll be very quiet and sly, and just, you know, a little tear in the heaven hell continuum, and all of a sudden, you know, people will just maybe, I don't know, you could go this far if you wanted to. People will start just slipping through that little rip in the heaven hell or time space continuum. You know, they'll just all of a sudden, you'll be talking to somebody, you know, like that, all over the planet, just little, and they're gone. But, you know, be cool. So apparently that's what Harold decided to do. He says that it will be not noticeable this time. Yeah, what's the point? I mean, if it's not noticeable, Harold, oh man, I don't know. I forgot this story last night when we did church night, but that's a real hair puller, isn't it? I mean, doesn't that just make you want to? No, not your own hair, Harold's hair. You know, you kidding? Man. So you can continue to watch TV and do whatever you do in the evening. The 38 of you who listen to this program, you know, we'll be here tomorrow night. Unless, you know, I'm going about my business tomorrow and all of a sudden.
A I get Michelle Bachman's clothes.
Ah! Crazy land! Crazy land! When we come back after this break, I'm going to play audio for you that was sent to me by Night Sky. And this audio has some singing in it. I'm going to give you lyrics now so you can sing along. Here's the lyrics. Mrs. Auctioneer, all the people here, we're asking you to hold all the sales right now. We're going to survive, but we don't know how. So I will play I'll play it for you. There's video with it. Obviously, you can't see the video. But when I tell you what this is all about, you may already know, but when I tell you what this is all about, I think you're going to say, yeah. We'll be right back.
Between that young boy's thighs, I'm with the God Squad, so listen good. Hear my battle cry down in Hollywood.
Uh-oh, he just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
Well, I can't believe I've seen the day. 25 before the hour. And this hour is being sponsored by Lauren and Gray. Their message, we love you, Mike. Thanks for seeking the truth for us. Very nice message. Thank you. And thanks for the sponsorship, Lauren. Okay. Wind in Hair sent this to me. Wind in Hair. This is about a group called 04, numeral 40, Organizing for Occupation. They went down to an auction court where people who have had their homes foreclosed on them have those homes auctioned off to the highest bidder. And these folks stopped the proceedings by singing. Now, six or eight of them wound up in the plastic handcuffs. Actually, it was nine. This happened in Brooklyn. They were protesting what they view as a system designed to benefit financial lending institutions, you know, at the expense of homeowners and low-income communities. Now, the New York judiciary has put in place mandatory pre-foreclosure settlement conferences 2 years ago. But 040 claims that these conferences do nothing to protect the rights of homeowners to remain in their homes. And their statement says, Karen Garganelli, who is a housing attorney and spokesperson for 040, said, quote, no lender, be it Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Citibank, or Chase, has any intention of settling by means other than a foreclosure auction or another predatory modification. These auctions displace our neighbors and destabilize our neighborhoods. We need a stronger system for dealing with foreclosures, one that holds banks accountable for making bad loans and then speculating on them as securitized instruments. And until the legislature passes more protective laws, 040 is calling on the courts to hold all foreclosure auctions, to stop foreclosure auctions and encouraging New Yorkers to raise their own voices in the courts to stall these auctions through concerted direct action, such as today's disruption. All right, go ahead and play it, Kathy. There is some script on the screen when you watch this video that obviously you won't be able to see. But, Is it playing? There it is. All right, this is a courtroom. And the bailiff is telling people that they have to be quiet. There'll be no disruptions. So the background noise you hear is this foreclosure court coming to order. And then the judge or the representative that handles this starts to read off the properties that are to be bid on. Now these are the protesters sitting in the courtroom, and they just start singing. Well, the bailiff and the cops and the judge and everybody, they're just dumbfounded. They don't know what to do. And they're singing, Mrs. Auctioneer, all the people here, we're asking you to hold all the sales right now. We're going to survive, but we don't know how. It's just amazing to see. The link is at the hashtag OWS website, and the group is called 040, O numeral 40, Organizing for Occupation. And of course, at this point, the cops come in and start arresting people and putting the plastic handcuffs on them. But I mean, this is such a great idea. This is a kind of disruption to the proceedings of predatory capitalism that are in fact very effective. There's no violence. The only violence is perpetrated against the demonstrators. And unless they were taken, a couple of people there had handheld cameras, obviously, and were recording all this. But I'm sure it's up at YouTube. 040, Organizing for Occupation, or hashtag OWS website. The video, here's a link. It's Vimeo, V-I-M-E-O, V-I-M-E-O.com /305-504-63. Let me give it to you again. Vimeo, V-I-M-E-O.com /305-504-63. But it is such an effective way of saying to the capitalist power structure, you know, you're a bunch of evil sons of bitches. You really are. Especially these predatory bankers. I mean, is there a country on earth right now that is not being utterly and absolutely chewed to pieces by each individual country's banking system? And so many of those banking systems, of course, are interconnected, interlocked, globalized. And you know, I'm more of the pull it down, burn it, and stomp on it generation. But to see the incredibly effective ways that the occupation people, the Occupy people, are going about these things, to witness that, I have to give them props from here to around the globe a couple of times. Their patience, their determination, and their commitment to nonviolence is just astonishing. It's astonishing. I have nothing but the deepest respect for these people. But this is a new group, 040, Organizing for Occupation. And no one in the courtroom knew what to do once these folks began singing. They just stood there. with a look on their face as if, what are you doing? I mean, why are you disrupting a perfectly legal procedure here? We're just auctioning off other people's houses, you know. I mean, what's the problem? These are people that the banks have foreclosed on. There's nothing wrong with that, you know. It happens all over the country now with alarming regularity. Hundreds, thousands, millions of people being tossed into the goddamn street so the bankers can have their filthy bonuses. And you people are sitting here singing? We don't know what to do. We're the court. Somebody stop the singing. Stop it. Officers, arrest these people. They're singing. You sick, miserable bastards. The people conducting the foreclosure sales. And you know what I have to say? What is disgusting to me are the investors who are like ghouls who are buying up foreclosed properties. You people ought to burn in hell, your own hell. There is no hell, but you know what I'm talking about. These are like, they're like grave robbers. Nah, I don't want to hear any of this nonsense about, well, Mike, this gives people who normally couldn't afford to buy a house a chance to buy one. No, I'm sorry. I'm not going for it. These are grave robbers. These are people who go to these foreclosure auctions. Damn you. Damn you. Because you're perpetuating this filthy system. You're a perpetrator. You go buy on a foreclosed property that somebody else's dreams and guts were just ripped out by one of these predatory banks. You're a perpetrator too. Shame on you. Shame on you if you buy foreclosed property. Shame on you. Oh yeah, like that makes a difference, right? Okay, we're gonna take a break and then come back. I have in my hand Prairie 2's missive for this evening. Also, more information from National Nurses United. This group is getting pretty damn creative, too. And a group of European rabbis are making a request to the Vatican. I'll have all this when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Against right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Lauren and Gray. The message, we love you, Mike. Thanks for seeking the truth for us. Thank you. I appreciate your sponsorship. From Prairie 2, stop feeding the 1%. Prairie 2 writes, initial unemployment claims fell last week, closing on the magic 400,000 level that is supposed to indicate jobs are being created. The number of layoffs remains this high, not because no jobs are being created, but because the workforce is being churned by corporate America to drive down wages. It's obvious, the unofficial or the official unemployment rate is a far rosier number than the reality. The participation rate among the civilian workforce is now under 65%. And the truth is, it's been in decline ever since the election of George W. Bush. As outsourcing of jobs accelerated at the start of the Republicans' American century, the percentage of Americans with jobs has steadily declined. Now, this is not the worst news. Even if you have a job, your standard of living is falling fast. The numbers show that the last 3 years of economic decline produced the longest and steepest drop in standard of living since statistics have been kept. In fact, the only reason that household income remained constant for most of the last 30 years was that the increase in numbers of jobs in a household went from 1.1 prior to Reagan to 1.8 just before the crash in 2008. Americans have an irrational belief in individual achievement and tend not to grasp that their own decline is really a result of the decline of the 99%. It took 3 years from the crash of 1929 until 1932 before people really started to demand change. The current crash is now 3 years old, and people once again are starting to wake up. The next big hurdle to overcome is the widespread belief that the problems are natural and can't be fixed. Republicans have all the talking points about job creators, too few millionaires to produce any significant revenue, and simultaneously that they, the millionaires, pay most of the taxes now. Oh, and the rich will leave if we tax them, or the rich will simply get out of paying the taxes, so why bother? The one talking point that I really like is that corporations will pass along the taxes to us anyway if we dare to raise them. This is, of course, a simple impossibility, as income taxes are only a percentage of profits, and to pass them along would directly increase those taxable profits, resulting in more revenue for the government on those additional profits. So that is a lie. The classical economic theory is that prices are basically what market competition will allow. But with the domination of the economy by fewer and larger corporations tapping an ever-shrinking middle class, you are really seeing the disappearance of classical economics. It's more like a study of predator-to-prey ratios during a drought on the savannah. So much so that the people who chart the course of the retail economy in the United States have completely abandoned the middle class as a market at all. The share of retail spending by the top 10% is now closing in on 40% and climbing as they harvest an ever bigger share of the prey available. Wildebeests stand shoulder to shoulder in a circle with horns facing out to keep the predators at bay. Are Americans that smart? Or will they continue to feed the top 1%? PrairieNumeral2.com. Yeah, that bit about household income remained constant for most of the last 30 years is because the number of jobs in a household went from, I guess the statisticians say, from 1.1 to 1.8, but that simply means that there was a time when one working adult in the household could support the family. For the most part, that was the husband, the male. And that's what the 1.1 figure is. The 1.8 figure is when all of a sudden, in order to maintain a middle class standard of living, the women had to go to work, the wives. Now, don't jump on me if you look in there and say, oh, wait a minute, that's got some sexism in it. Come on. I'm talking statistics here. I'm not talking anything about women or men, except for the fact that It took over the last 30 years and takes today two, possibly three people working in a household now to provide the sort of income that was available to one worker 30 years ago, 40 years ago. That's all. That's what the stat means, just in case that was a little bit cloudy. Yeah, I'm really tired of not standing in a circle with other wildebeests with the horns out. That's what the occupation movement is all about. That's what the 040 movement is about. That's what's showing up in these filthy, filthy foreclosure auction courts and singing songs is all about. Ah. Damn. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, what the nurses, National Nurses United, is doing next. Wow, these people, you know, every union organization in America ought to take a lesson from these folks. The problem is, and please don't understand, misunderstand this, the problem is so many union organizations, the leadership anyway, has completely sold out. Completely sold out their membership, completely abandoned the idea of union activism, taking to the streets and supporting the people who are doing their damnedest to support the unions. Union leadership in the past 25 years, in my opinion, I guess, which is most of what you hear on this program, but union leadership in the past 25 years has been a total sellout, a complete abandonment of union principles. Malloy Show. All right, before we get to the National Nurses United action, John in Fargo has a comment, as does Kurt in Beaverton, Oregon. John first, regarding the videos of the murder of Gaddafi today. Dear Mike, as far as the promotion of Muammar's pics, it is just another limb of the same lamestream media. Shock, shock and awe, shock doctrine, shock and ho-hum. Everything is on the table. We change tyrants slash terrorists, allies at our convenience, like we change babies' diapers. History is so well forgotten for the evildoer of the day. The best slash worst story of the day is the expected response for the opposite of reality crowd. The Republicans, the conservatives, the right-wingers, the nutballs. No credit, much as I am not a fan of bin Laden, Gaddafi, etc. Death, every life precious, crowd cheers, the death of tyrants. However, one minute we are backing them, then they are bad. And all I heard was on the fake media paraphrasing, we led from behind, now they have an unstable government and so on. They are shameless, Mike. President and the military of Barack himself could defend these teabaggers' jobs, families, lives, personally, saving their life, and yet they would have a reason why he did it wrong. He is black, he is the president, and darn, we cannot support him no matter what. The Nancy model, Nancy Reagan, just say no. Compromise is an ugly word to Republicans this day and age, but truth and reality will shine over their sorry small minds with small, ignorant thoughts coming to occupy your mind, peeps. Rant makes me happy. Keep up the word, Mike. Sorry if this is a bit on that rambling man's side, but my fingers and brain power can't keep up with the words spin. Sounds like Allen Ginsberg or Jack Kerouac. I love it. John in Fargo is a reincarnated beat writer. If that's not Mexico City Blues or Dharma Bums, I don't know what is. Thank you, John. Thank you, John. Kurt writes, Mike, I have an idea why we were and will continue to be shown the graphic videos of Gaddafi's death. I've always loved horror movies, not slasher movies, but horror movies. Horror movies used to be well-written stories that piqued the viewer's imagination to stir up the viewer's own fears. Nowadays, a story is forfeited for gore. Small g. Absolute graphic, disgusting gore. Nothing's left to one's imagination. A couple of current examples are The Walking Dead and American Horror Story. Both are television shows that depict the most absolutely disgusting, graphically detailed gore to the point where I am disgusted and disinterested. I believe the American people have been absolutely desensitized to any story, whether it be fiction or nonfiction. Gaddafi's story apparently doesn't warrant telling when it's easier to simply dehumanize him and everything to do with what happened and will continue to happen, when all the corporate media has to do is show some graphic video clips to get people's attention. The zombie apocalypse is already upon us. Just look all around you and you'll see them all staring blankly at their iPhones. Yeah. This is from our friend in New York, Carl Ginsberg, who is passing out the media advisories for National Nurses United. Carl's an attorney, actually represents them. And just FYI, Carl was one of the few, there were only about three, good guy executives at the old Air America. That's how I met Carl. Carl and John Sinton were two of the good guys. Had Carl Ginsberg and John Sinton had been just allowed to run the company, Air America right now would be a powerhouse instead of the right-wing freaks that took over because they had money. But I digress. Carl Ginsberg now is representing National Nurses United. This is his press relief. With a growing international call for a tax on financial transactions to heal global economies. Yeah, have you heard about that? Just a simple transaction tax on these predatory bastards who make up all these financial instruments that nobody can understand and then sell them back and forth to brain-dead investors and take their cut. Transaction tax, or a tax on financial transactions, would solve a lot of problems. But of course, as the Republican zombies will tell you as they line up on the stage for the next question from Anderson Cooper or whoever, no new taxes! Oh, no, it's worse than that. That's what George Herbert Walker Bush said a lifetime ago. What these zombies say is they're going to cut corporate taxes to zero. As if most corporations didn't already have a zero tax rate. But I digress. With growing international call for a tax on financial transactions to heal global economies, National Nurses United will bring the demand to the doorsteps of the U.S. Treasury Department November 3rd. November 3rd. What are they going to do? The nurses are going to march on the Treasury Department. How about that? Calling on Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner and the Obama administration to get on board and to end lobbying efforts at home and abroad against a Wall Street tax. The Washington protest begins with Lafayette Square rally. That's right across the street from the White House, for those of you who don't have a map, at 11:30 a.m. on November 3rd. RNs are also asking people to call the White House, 202-224-3121, and to demand the Obama administration support the global movement for a financial transaction tax, the FTT. Concurrently, a National Nurses United delegation will join with other nurses from around the world at the G20 Summit of World Leaders November 3rd in Cannes, France, to also make the case for a financial transaction tax. You go, nurses. The protest in Cannes is an international effort initiated by National Nurses United and the Global Union Federated Public Services International. NNU Executive Director Roseanne DeMauro said, quote, it is long past time for Secretary Geithner and President Obama to get on board with other world leaders in supporting this common sense approach to raise badly needed revenues to help fund the critical programs we need to revive the U.S. and other global economies, end quote. Now, to make it clear, NNU members have been rallying for attacks on trades of stocks, bonds, currencies, credit default swaps, and other major Wall Street transactions for months, including marches by over 1,000 nurses and allies back in June on Wall Street in New York and in Washington. Did you hear about that? Probably not. And why not? Because corporate media wouldn't dare have reported it. DeMauro went on to say, quote, a meaningful Wall Street tax in the U.S. could raise hundreds of billions of dollars to help create a new economy for our nation, one premised on health care for all, good jobs at living wages, full funding for quality public education, a healthy environment, and other programs that revive our communities and nation, end quote. But you know what the leadership in this country, Democrat and Republican, what they're saying? No, no! No, we're not going to do that! The income of the upper one half of 1% is more important than it keeps growing and growing into the billions. Who's going to be the first trillionaire? Goddamn, America is waiting with its breath abated. We don't want education. We don't want health care. We don't want good jobs. We just want to see who is the first trillionaire.
Everywhere. I do not like them on my station. I do not like them in my nation. It's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So in France, on November 3rd, National Nurses United and other international nursing organizations, they're part of the Global Union Public Services International. They will join with the International Trade Union Confederation and other allies, including Oxfam, in a colorful action at the G20 summit in Cannes, where nurses will take a symbolic emergency measure, or will take symbolic emergency measures and inject an FTT to resuscitate the ailing global economy. And National Nurses United is affiliated with PSI, which represents 20 million public service workers in 150 countries. They're going to resuscitate or inject a financial transaction tax to resuscitate the ailing global economy. It's amazing what committed union members can do. And again, to National Nurses United, just the deepest thanks and respect for what they are doing. The rabbis. Yeah, okay. European rabbis urged the Vatican, oh, this will work, yesterday to stop any attempts to reconcile with a group of ultra-traditionalist Catholics. The Vatican wants to bring them back into the fold, you see. Now, the radical group of ultra-traditionalist Catholics is the Society of St. Pius X. Yeah, well, look it up. St. Pius X, look it up. Until the Society of St. Pius X pledges to renounce the members who the rabbis say are anti-Semitic. Now, the charge of anti-Semitism is tossed around like so many ping pong balls, but occasionally it is absolutely correct. And in my opinion, this happens to be one of those instances. The Conference of European Rabbis said Bishop Richard Williamson, already known for publicly denying the Holocaust, was one of two members who recently revived the age-old accusation that the Jews killed the Christian Messiah. Here we go again. Now, of course, ever since the Second Vatican Council, when was that? Back in the 60s, the Roman Catholic Church said it did not hold Jews responsible for killing Jesus. But here we go again. I mean, this is the reason, one of the reasons, why the Catholic Church and the German Nazi Party worked hand in hand very closely. All the church had to do was to keep its filthy, corrupted mouth shut while the Nazis did the killing. And that's exactly what the church did. Now, for you Catholics out there, before you send me your emails and calling me an MFer and all this other stuff, just do a Google search. I've asked you this before. Do a Google on Nazis Catholics or Nazis Roman Catholic Church or Nazis Vatican or Nazis Pope. Just do it before you send me your filthy email. So here we go again. The the accusation that has motivated European and Christian communities and or Catholic communities and not European Catholic communities for 15, 16, 17, 1800 years to butcher Jews. Here we go again. Christ killers! You murdered God! Whew. Man. Yeah, I missed that one last night on church, too. Church night, too. But, we were talking about Susan Sarandon last night. Was that last night we talked about her? I'll bring it up next hour then. Her referencing the current pope as the Nazi pope, which he, you know, he was a member of Hitler Youth. He was in the Wehrmacht. He was a Nazi, and now he's the pope. What?
You do the math.
You do the math. Okay. All right. Quick break here. We'll be right back. Stay with us if you have the nerve.
Cowboy, I look for Jesus all my days, and on the prairie or in the city, I'll help him round up all the strays. I don't have much to offer him, I'm very smart, you see, but I can love my Jesus, and he can still love me, and partner all I want.
Show. Talk radio matters here.
Before the hour, well, the Republicans have done it again. Associated Press is reporting just a couple of minutes ago that the Senate, the Republicans in the Senate, have scuttled jobs legislation, a part of the Obama jobs package that was aimed at helping state and local governments avoid layoffs of teachers and firefighters. Republicans unanimously opposed the measure on a 50-50 vote that fell short of the 60 required to defeat the Republican filibuster. Oh, and then after they defeated it, Republicans say the president is more interested in picking fights with them than seeking compromise. You sons of bitches. That's 400,000 jobs. 400,000 jobs, including firefighters and teachers that are now going to disappear. You folks like these Republicans, huh? You right-wingers, you like this? Do you? You sick bastards, do you like this? I hope your house catches on fire. I have to say it. I hope it does. I hope these layoffs occur in your neighborhood, you Republicans who urged your sick, disgusting, corporate-owned pigs in the Senate, in the House, wherever, to vote against this. And I hope your house catches on fire and you call for fire rescue and the line's been disconnected. Drop dead. You scum. You are really scum. You right wingers. You Senate Republicans, you House Republicans, you're just going to keep this up because the black man is just more than you can stand, isn't he? You awful, awful right wingers. I wish you all would just get the hell out of my country, you pigs. And teachers, huh? I hope some of you right-wingers have kids in third, fourth grade, and when they go to school next week, they'll find out that their class size just doubled. Instead of 25 students now, the teacher will have to deal with 50. Stick that in your pipe and smoke it, you half-wits. God, I hate these people. Way to go, Republicans! Yeah, destroy the country! Liberal talk show host advocates people's houses burning down. Go ahead, you right-wing pig bloggers. Put it out there. Oh, man. Anything, you know, this is so infuriating because it puts me in a horrible position of having to defend. This is like when Clinton was being sought like an escapee from a chain gang in the South, and the Republicans were a bunch of goddamn hound dogs just pounding through the night trying to get him back in 99. Remember 98? Remember that?
Oh, Mike, that was so long ago.
And now they're after Obama. These filthy Republicans. You know, I'd like to spend about 10 minutes with Mitch McConnell and John Boehner. I sure would. I sure would. You know, just to sit down and chat with them. Man. Am I yelling again? Damn. From Bruce in California. Mike, this is from Wikipedia about Gaddafi. Thought you'd find it interesting. Here it is. There's a growing indication that Libya's Gaddafi era... Boy, that was quick. That Libya's Gaddafi-era intelligence service had a cozy relationship with the CIA, who voluntarily provided information to Gaddafi on Libyan dissidents in exchange for using Libya as a base for extraordinary renditions. Why, of course. Why, of course. Absolutely. We knew this. And didn't some of the renditions that the Bush murderers engineered, a lot of them went to Egypt too, right? And Syria. Isn't that interesting? Libya, Egypt, and Syria. That's why we supported those regimes to the extent that we did. And supporting a regime doesn't mean publicly declaring support. It just means, you know, making sure that the regime stays in business because we needed them to torture people. They hate us because we own houses, I think Bush said in the last, it seems like a million years ago, doesn't it? These filthy, filthy, filthy people. Governor Rick Perry's presidential campaign said it will reimburse owners of private jets an amount in the five figures. One day after facing questions about whether the presidential campaign of Rick Perry underpaid the jets, the owners, for using the jets. The owners, of course, are wealthy donors, which all this could mean that the Rick Perry campaign may have received large unreported in-kind contributions, which is against the law. The campaign's outside general counsel, Bill Canfield, said he believed that fewer than 10 planes were involved and the amount to be reimbursed was in five, but not six figures. Oh, $99,000, but not $100,000. Is that what you're saying, you pig? He said the campaign would amend its finances, financial report filed last weekend and asked the Federal Election Commission for an opinion to resolve what he called differing interpretations of the relevant rules. Why is Rick Perry doing this only after he was found out? Rick Perry is a liar. Well, he's a Republican, and he's running for president. He is a liar. He is a liar. New York Times article reported on Tuesday, on 9 hours of flights the campaign took in August aboard a Cessna Citation 10, owned by Brian Pardo, a Texas businessman and Perry supporter, who is already under investigation for potential federal and state securities violations. Well, hell yeah. I mean, if you can give the next president of the United States or the governor of Texas free airplane stuff, man, that just might, you know, squelch that investigation. The Perry campaign reimbursed Mr. Pardo $21,000, but the true market value of the flights was closer to $60,000, independent charter company said. Oh, Rick Perry, you goddamn thief, you goddamn criminal, you filthy, filthy liar. And Bachman. And Herman Cain, I have never seen such a freak show in my life, ever. Alabama's new immigration law, the nation's harshest, went into effect last month. And it is already reaping a bitter harvest of dislocation and fear. According to the New York Times, Hispanic homes are emptying. Businesses are closing. Employers are wondering where their workers have gone. Parents who have not yet figured out where to go are lying low and keeping their children home from school. Isn't this a great country? Isn't this great? To the law's architects and supporters, this is excellent news. Chris Kobach, the Kansas Secretary of State, who has a side career of drafting extremist immigration legislation for states and cities, notoriously in Arizona, now in Alabama, this fruitcake says, ha ha, you're encouraging people to comply with the law on their own. So they're leaving. That's a real knee slapper, isn't it? The pain isn't felt just by the undocumented legal immigrants and native-born Alabamans who happen to be or look Hispanic are now far more vulnerable to officially sanctioned harassment. Many of those children are being kept home from school by frightened parents who were born and raised Americans. The problems don't stop there. Farmers are already worrying that with the exodus, crops will go unpicked. Like much of the rest of the country, Alabama needs immigrant labor because too many native-born citizens lack the skill, lack the stamina, lack the willingness to work in the fields, even in a time of steep unemployment. The new law has also added frustrating layers of paperwork for Alabamans who must now prove legal status when enrolling school children, signing leases, and interacting with government. After the law went into effect, the lines at the Department of Motor Vehicles in Birmingham grew so long, the officials had to bring in portable toilets. Go ahead, fill in your own punchline on that one. We'll be right back.
Well, this is evident, yeah. In the American way, you must give and I shall take. I will tell you what is moral and what's just. Because I want, because I will, because I can.
Ted before the hour from Kathleen in Oakland, California. Mike, I heard your show tonight where you played the Singers at the foreclosure auction. I was moved to tears. Let me give you my idea for resolution. Occupy protesters should demand the foreclosed homeowners be given first right of refusal in the sale of their foreclosed homes. The present law blames the homeowner by forbidding him or her to rebuy the house under the concept of unjust enrichment. We all know it is not the fault of the homeowner that he or she lost their job, or that their mortgage refinance was bungled by money-hoarding bankers, or that their mortgage was bundled and sold illegally as part of a derivative package, etc., etc., etc. Our government should acknowledge the American citizen as a victim deserving of a chance by allowing the homeowner to bid on his own foreclosed home as a way of fairly adjusting the real estate market. Otherwise, it will be adjusted to the benefit of speculators, the very vultures you decry. I am hoping that the 040 movement, or the 040 movement, will distribute the location of every foreclosure auction and allow us seniors and the unemployed to come down there and sing. The real song is "We Shall Overcome." Thanks for considering this and consider me a new listener. Kathleen in Oakland, retired paralegal. Thank you, Kathleen. I appreciate your point of view. This is going too far, I'm telling you. And then tonight, the Republicans in the Senate murder the weak tea sort of jobs bill that Obama had suggested, that would have put 400,000 teachers and firefighters back to work or allow them to keep their jobs. These are state and local jobs, not federal jobs. And the Republicans said no. No. And a couple of Democrats had to vote in that too, didn't they? To say no. No jobs. No. Salutations and applause to the Occupy movement. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. But I must tell you at some point, either one of three things are going to happen. And I don't think the first one, that the Occupy movement will fizzle out. The second, I don't think that's going to happen. But the three possibilities, the Occupy movement fizzles out. The second possibility, the Occupy movement snowballs to the point where millions of people finally wake up to what's going on and take to the streets and join this vanguard of freedom fighters that are out there. And the third thing, and I don't want to think about this one too much, the third thing will be absolute violence in this country. And if you want to see a picture of what that violence would look like, take a look at Greece. Or take a look at the countries in North Africa. So the choices to me are pretty stark. I hope it's the second choice. I hope at some point after this alarm clock now has gone off with the Occupy movement, people in 80, 90, 100 cities, towns around the country, the vanguard is out there. The young people and not so young people are out there. They've got it started. 400 here, 1,000 there, 600 there, 2,000 there. Another 4,000 or 5,000 will show up for a march or a demonstration. That's not going to do it. That's a start. That's only a start. 5,000, 10,000, 100,000, 500,000 is not going to do it. It's going to take millions of Americans, millions of us, who will take to the streets on a given day and goddamn demand that the corporate ownership of everything in this country stop now. And it's got to be a demand that carries with it absolute fear of what will happen if the demand is not met. One of three choices. Anybody see a fourth one? And don't say, well, you know, business as usual. That's the first one. That's if the Occupy movement fizzles out. If it fizzles out because the vanguard, the people that are out there now, are just drained of all their energy because they realize not only are they fighting this corporate monster, this predatory capitalist multi-headed hydra, but they're also fighting against the absolute apathy of the American public. What's it going to be, folks? You're going to be a wildebeest standing in a circle with your horns out to keep the predators away, or you're going to try to make a run across the savannah and have your ass eaten. What are you going to do? Am I yelling again? Damn. How does that happen? How does that happen every night? I just don't understand. Stop the machine. Stop the machine. Create a new world. Or die. I'll go take a cold shower and be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. Have you ever heard of a group called the Emergency Committee for Israel? It is a extreme right-wing pro-Israel pressure group here in the United States that arguably is run by the type of neo-fascist that is literally destroying just about everything on Earth that has intrinsic value. They're destroying everything, these right-wing pressure groups, whether they're pro-Israel or pro-militarism or pro-U.S. imperialism or, you know, whatever. And I'm only talking about this country. I realize they exist all over the planet. But the Emergency Committee for Israel is attempting to define the Occupy Wall Street protests as anti-Semitic. According to Think Progress, Eli Clifton writing at Think Progress, I don't know how to respond to that first sentence. The Occupy Wall Street protest is anti-Semitic, even though so many of the young people and us young people participating are American Jews. But Israel, Palestine, women, children, anything can be sacrificed on this bloody altar of neo-fascist capitalism. Anything. It doesn't make any difference how righteous your thoughts are, your motivations are. If you piss off the neo-Nazis in this country, the capitalists who run these massive organizations, you are going to feel the lash. And it doesn't make any difference who you are. You can be Jew, Gentile, Muslim, Christian. It doesn't make any difference. Atheist, gay, straight, boy, girl, man, woman. It matters not. If you piss off, if you irritate, if you are seen as a threat to the massive capitalist monster that's devouring everything on Earth, then you'll be labeled as something. In this case, you're an anti-Semite. Why, of course. Of course you're an anti-Semite, all you people demonstrating against capitalist destruction of the planet. Of course you're anti-Semites. Even you Jews. You didn't know that. You didn't know you're anti- Oh, yeah, yeah, you are. You're anti-Semites. According to whom? Emergency Committee for Israel, ECI, a board member, Rachel Abrams, has a blog called Bad Rachel. And she fills her blog site with homophobic, anti-Palestinian, innuendo-filled screeds about political opponents. Last year, she focused on the alleged bisexual or self-described bisexuality of Christopher Hitchens, who is probably inches away from his own demise with esophageal cancer. And she had a post titled Giving Homosexuality a Bad Name. And this is a couple sentences she wrote, quote, where everyone stands on the homosexuality question, I'm agnostic. Or would be if the gay community would quit trying to shove legislation down my throat. But anyway, there can be no denying bisexuality's double betrayal. You never know whether you're the man of the hour or the woman when the ground on which you're standing is going to turn to ashes. Nor any denying the self-admiring so-called nourishment its promiscuous conquests afford. What? Following the death of Senator Teddy Kennedy, and this has a sexual reference in it, so if you don't want to hear it, here's a warning for you. She wrote the following limerick and posted it on her website. An amorous sot named of Teddy lost control when things got a bit heady. He went over the side, left his ride in the tide, and his squeeze giving head to an eddy. You either understand that or you don't. But Rachel Abrams saves her harshest, most dehumanizing words for Palestinians. After celebrating the release of the IDF soldier Gilad Shalit, Abrams writes that the Israelis should, quote, round up his captors, the slaughtering, death-worshipping, innocent butchering, child-sacrificing savages who dip their blood, their hands in blood, and use women, those who aren't strapping bombs to their own devil's spawn and sending them out to meet their 72 virgins, by taking the lives of the school bus riding, heart-drawing, transformer-doodling, homework-losing children of others. Take them, those who already haven't been pimped out by their mothers, to the murder god as shields, hiding behind their burkas and cradles like the unmanned animals they are, and throw them not into your prisons where they can bide until they're traded by the thousands for another child of Israel, but throw them into the sea to float there, food for sharks, stargazers, and whatever other oceanic carnivores God has put there for this purpose. Woo! End quote. Good God! Well, freedom of speech means freedom of speech, doesn't it? But, of course, who she is counts for something. Rachel Abrams, who is married to one of the most murderous vampires in recent U.S. history. A blood-drenched man, Elliot Abrams, most of you know his name. A neocon policy analyst who served under Reagan and George W. Bush. And right now, served his time, so to speak, he is currently a senior fellow for Middle Eastern Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. Let me quote a couple of things for it. During the Reagan administration, Abrams gained notoriety for his involvement in foreign policy decisions regarding Nicaragua and El Salvador. Now, those foreign policy decisions, they were not decisions. They were acts of murderous violence against peasants, against people who couldn't defend themselves, against people who simply wanted to organize themselves into worker cadres or unions, people who did not like the fact that their country, the various countries in Central America, were being dominated, as they have been for the past century and a half, by U.S. corporations and the church, who were keeping them in abject poverty, denying them any kind of political rights whatsoever. Elliot Abrams made sure that the military juntas who ran these countries were murderous, just goddamn murderous. Elliot Abrams oversaw the construction in Honduras at a U.S. base there. Well, a base run by Hondurans, but through which a lot of U.S. Materiel and CIA officers transversed. But the building there of a torture area that nobody knew about until after all the murder that Elliot Abrams engineered in Central America stopped, and these hidden rooms were found with the results of the torture that was carried on. Elliot Abrams is probably the unspoken one who whispered into Bush and Cheney's ears that torture worked wonders. Do it. Elliot Abrams is a ghoul of the worst kind, and this woman is his wife. It wasn't just Nicaragua and El Salvador. He was also Assistant Secretary of State in the 1980s, and that gave him entree into the countries where he was going to commit his murder, where he was going to engineer the bloodletting that saturated Central America. If anyone in the United States in the past 30 years is comparable to the murderous activities of Elliot Abrams, it'd have to be Henry Kissinger, and even he is not as blood-drenched as Elliot Abrams. And Elliot Abrams' wife has now declared the Occupy Wall Street organization, or disorganization, to be anti-Semitic? the hour. So Elliot Abrams, one of the most bloodied killers of innocent people in recent U.S. history, has a wife who named Rachel, who is determined, along with her cohort in this pro-fascist organization called the Emergency Committee for Israel, attempting to paint all these young and fairly innocent demonstrators as being anti-Semitic. The ECI, Emergency Committee for Israel, is set up and run by Bill Kristol, Gary Bauer, and Rachel Abrams. They're the ones that conceived it. It launched a YouTube video about a week ago trying to paint the Wall Street protests as anti-Semitic. The video, which was promoted by the Emergency Committee for Israel's go-to media outlets, that would be Politico's Ben Smith, the Weekly Standard, and Commentary, alleges that Democratic Party leaders are, quote, turning a blind eye to anti-Semitic, anti-Israel attacks, end quote, and urges Obama and Nancy Pelosi to, quote, stand up to the mob, end quote. Now, what are they talking about? Well, in so many of the occupations, signs are held up about the rights of the Palestinians. The rights of the Palestinians. And because of that, here we go again. These American Jews who are determined to murder any kind of resistance to Israeli policies in the Middle East are at it again, only this time with the Emergency Committee for Israel, the Emergency Committee for Israel. So if you hold up a sign that says support the citizens of Gaza, you are immediately an anti-Semite who wants to see the destruction of Israel and blood flowing in the streets. But if you are some right-wing neo-fascist like Rachel Abrams or her blood-soaked vampire of a husband, ah, well then, that's entirely different. I can't stand, I can't stand these people. I really can't. There really is no point. I tell you what, go to thinkprogress.org and do the, find this. Just look it up. Rachel Abrams. And you'll find stuff that, will sufficiently turn your stomach. And then when you're finished doing that, for those of you who don't know who her husband is, go to Wikipedia and look up Elliot Abrams. These two are just saturated with blood and gore from the entire Western Hemisphere. Elliot Abrams is an instigator of mass murder, invasion of countries. I swear to God, these people are just, they're ghoulish. They're unspeakable. They make Donald Rumsfeld look like a babe in the woods. I don't know who would be their equal in American contemporary history, with the exception possibly of Henry Kissinger, who is also a blood-soaked ghoul who storms around still at his age. What is he, in his 80s? Still storms around promoting murder and mayhem wherever he can. Oh, my God. But you see, this is the United States of America, and these people, these Israeli or Israel supporters, the fanatical Likudniks, will look under every inside every haystack, under every mattress, to look behind every closed door, deeply buried in a basement someplace 1,000 feet underground, to find the least little indication of support for anything Palestinian, and that becomes massively anti-Semite. Anti-Jewish. Don't you people ever stop. But to read the writing of Rachel Abrams, the wife of Elliot, is to read the writings of a woman totally deranged, probably from the absorption of her husband's global bloodletting, to the point where she now has become equally mad, out of her mind. Read her stuff. And I get emails from people who say, all you do is use bad language, Mike. Yeah. You want to see world-class killers on the loose whose language transcends anything that I could possibly come close to? Then check out some of the supporters of the Likudniks in Israel. Check out these Americans, Elliot Abrams and Rachel Abrams, and some of their cohort. Check out what they say. Check out what happens to people who show the slightest nod toward equal rights for Palestinians. Take a look at what happens to them. Sick, sick, sick.
Your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. God, it just infuriates me when you have people, a family in this case, husband and wife, who are so involved in hatred, in fomenting violence against anyone they choose to. I mean, Elliot Abrams was hell-bent on murdering or seeing that as many people in Central America were murdered during the 80s as he possibly could. He was to Central America what Kissinger was to Southeast Asia. I mean, just blood-drenched vampires who never got enough killing and still do not. It just goes on and on and on. And yet these people operate with impunity. They just keep doing what they're doing. And most of them live to ripe old ages, and then they croak, choking to death on their own bile at some point. But God forbid somebody should criticize what they're doing. Oh, well, we know about you, Malloy. You hate the Jews, too! You know, that kind of thing. So now we have Rachel Abrams, the wife of the mass genocidal killer. Elliot Abrams, whose hands never touched a drop of blood ever. Of course not. He was drenched in blood as the spray from the violence he created saturated him. And her now, apparently. It's astonishing. Oh, well, moving right along, huh? Moving right along? Did you hear about this? Thanks to David Swanson, National Public Radio. You know, here in Atlanta, the NPR affiliate is on their twice a year desperate struggle for funding. Only it's not so desperate. They have maybe 70,000-80,000 contributors here in the Metro Atlanta area, it seems like, at the end of every drive, who provides them with the millions that they need to keep going, which is fine. I love listening to NPR, and then I read something like this, NPR gets a producer fired for participating in the Occupy Wall Street. The Occupy movement in Washington at Freedom Plaza, where I was a couple of weeks ago. National Public Radio yesterday discovered that a woman named Lisa Simeone, who produced a show about opera called The World of Opera, had been participating in a nonviolent occupation of Freedom Plaza in D.C. organized by October2011.org. NPR finds out about it that same day. NPR persuades the company for which Simeone worked to fire her, cutting her income in half and purging from the so-called public airwaves a voice that had never mentioned politics on NPR ever, not once, never. This was the email sent to all NPR staff. This is from NPR Communications, sent Wednesday, October 19, 2011, 6:12 p.m. Subject, from Dana Rame, Communications Alert to all staff, from Dana Davis Rame, regarding Communications Alert. We recently learned of World of Opera host Lisa Simeone's participation in an occupied D.C. group. World of Opera is produced by WDAV, a music and arts station based in Davidson, North Carolina. The program is distributed by NPR. Lisa is not an employee of WDAV or NPR. She's a freelancer! We are in conversation with WDAV about how they intend to handle this. We, of course, take this issue very seriously. As a reminder, all public comment, including social media, on this matter is being managed by NPR Communications. All media requests should be routed through NPR Communications. We will keep you updated as needed. Thanks. Oh, and they put in their phone number, 202-513-2300. There it is again. All requests should be routed through NPR Communications. Well, it says all media requests. Well, you're a media, aren't you, gentle listener? Of course you are. So here's the number you want to call, according to Dana Rame, 202-513-2300. About 3.5 hours after the above email was sent, Ms. Simeone had been fired by a show called Sound Prince as punishment for having been, quote, unethical. Now you can go to Sound Prince and find her bio. And you go to NPR and find her bio. Soundprint is a show that does not even touch on politics. It is not an NPR program and not distributed by NPR. It is, however, heard on public radio stations. And as Swanson points out, despite the title NPR World of Opera, the show is produced by a small station, WDAV, for which Simeone contracts. She's not even employed by WDAV. Simeone was not an NPR employee. WDAV has not expressed any concern over Ms. Simeone's so-called ethics. Simeone told David Swanson, quote, I find it puzzling that NPR objects to my exercising my rights as an American citizen, the right to free speech, the right to peaceable assembly, on my own time, in my own life. I'm not an NPR employee. I'm a freelancer. NPR doesn't pay me. I'm also not a news reporter. I don't cover politics. I've never brought a whiff of my political activities into the work I've done for NPR World of Opera. What is NPR afraid I'll do? Insert a seditious comment into a synopsis of Madame Butterfly? This sudden concern with my political activities is also surprising in light of the fact that Mara Liasson reports on politics for NPR, yet appears as a commentator on Fox TV. Scott Simon hosts an NPR news show, yet writes political op-eds for national newspapers. Cokie Roberts reports on politics for NPR, yet accepts large speaking fees from businesses. Does NPR also send out communications alerts about their activities? That's the end of Lisa Simeone's puzzling response to this this action by NPR. And Swanson writes, let's be clear about Simeone's political activities. We have 3/4 of the country wanting billionaires taxed, 2/3 wanting wars ended, large majorities wanting funding moved from the military to green energy and education and jobs. Simeone has been taking part in a nonviolent encampment designed to facilitate the petitioning of our government for a redress of grievances, a right guaranteed by the First Amendment. That's all. She has been participating. Nothing more. There is nothing more specific to the allegation, nothing in particular that she has allegedly done other than participate in a nonviolent mass mobilization on behalf of majority opinion. It may be difficult for NPR bigwigs to understand why we don't all just rent $400 per night hotel rooms instead of littering a public square with tents. But NPR's highly paid political agitators on behalf of the 1% are part of the problem. They are what we are protesting, and that is presumably what makes our speech and assembly, in the words of NPR, unethical. Or perhaps the breach of ethics is to be found in behaving as a decent citizen while simultaneously possessing some connection to the most insidious corporate loudspeaker in the country, one labeled public, but belonging to the 1%. And the most important point to stress here is that all requests should be routed through NPR Communications, 202-513-2300. David Swanson, by the way, is the author of War is a Lie. Unbelievable, huh? Elliot Abrams' wife can describe the Palestinian people in the most disgusting manner possible. Saying that the children in these refugee camps have already been pimped out by their mothers to be murder gods. But they should all be dumped into the sea. But I thought it was the Arabs that were talking about pushing the Israelis into the sea. Oh, gosh, I guess I got it backward all these years. To float there, she writes, as shark food. And an NPR producer, or not even a producer, a freelance producer who has no connection to NPR, let me be clear about that, can have pressure put on her by NPR to the production company, to the radio station, to whomever, and she can be fired. Where do you live, Truth Seeker? Before the hour. Yeah, where do you think you live, Truth Seeker? Oh, yeah, and Susan Sarandon? I don't know, I just like her acting. Susan Sarandon, Oscar-winning actress, is also feeling the heat from both Catholic and Jewish groups. Why are the Jewish groups involved in this one? She reportedly called Pope Benedict the 16th a Nazi during an interview last Saturday at the Hamptons Film Festival in New York.
Of course.
Newsday first reported the incident and described the chain of events that led to the offhand comment. Newsday reports it this way. She was discussing her 1995 film, Dead Man Walking, based on the anti-death penalty book by Sister Helen Prejean, a copy of which she sent to the Pope. She said, quote, the last one, not this Nazi one we have now, end quote. She was being interviewed by actor Bob Balaban. He gently tut-tutted, but Sarandon only repeated her remark. Now, the killers and the child, the spirit killers that infest, that are the Catholic Church. They don't infest it. They are the Catholic Church. The organizing principle of the Catholic hierarchy. I'm not talking about their religion. I'm talking about the organizing principle of the Catholic hierarchy is now child sexual violence. And the hierarchy has been as open as they possibly can about Pope Benedict XVI's membership in the Hitler Youth during the 1940s. And as the Vatican repeatedly said, many children were forced to be part of Hitler Youth during that time. Now, the usual voices who scream and froth at the mouth out of anything that could be, might even be considered just the least bit anti-Catholic, no matter how many children are buggered, no matter how many little souls are smashed by the Catholic priest or the bishop or whomever, it makes no difference. No matter how many millions of peasants are told to just suck up their horrible situation of life, contribute to the church, and don't worry, you'll get your reward from the Virgin Mary or Jesus or whomever they're touting this week in order to raise money. Well, one of those people, Bill Donahue, president of the Catholic League for Religious and Civil Rights. Yeah, that's what it's called. For Religious and Civil Rights for the Catholics. Anyone else? Oh, no! Well, he comes out with his statement. He called Susan Sarandon's comment, quote, despicable. Every time I see that word, I think of who's the Looney Tunes character? That's despicable. Is that Daffy Duck or is it Sylvester the Cat? That's despicable. Despicable. Donahue says that's despicable. Bill Donahue said that Susan Sarandon doesn't know what she's talking about, pointing out that the Pope left the military as soon as he was able. Really? Now, why are the Jews jumping in here? This is the part I don't get, you see? But I guess the Jews jump in because they rely on the Christian community to support their murderous adventures against the Palestinians. But on the other hand, how many photos of Pope Pius, who was it, 10th, 12th, I don't know, hard to keep him straight, along with all sorts of cardinals and bishops in Europe, during the reign of the Nazi regime, how many photos have to be shown to the Jews showing the church and the Nazis smiling, hugging, goosing each other, just happy to be destroying the Jews? How many photos have to, and yet the Jews are saying, oh, well, no, this is not right. No, In a Washington Post blog, David Wolpe, rabbi of Sinai Temple in Los Angeles, explains the word shouldn't have been used at all, the word Nazi. Rabbi Wolpe writes, quote, unless you are an enthusiast for genocide, you do not qualify as a Nazi. But, oh my God, what do you think the church was doing? What do you think they were doing? Their silent complacency, their silent complicity in the butchery of 6, 7, 8 million Jews. Are you crazy, Rabbi? Are you out of your mind? What did the church do during the Inquisition to Jews, to Muslims, to women? What do you mean, unless you're an enthusiast for genocide? Is there a more enthusiastic organization for genocide down through the last 2 millennia than the Catholic Church? Oh, but I digressed. He went on to say, unless you believe that large segments of humanity are intrinsically inferior, you do not qualify. I would reference you to Mrs. Abrams, who says Palestinians should be used as shark food. The rabbi says there are many ways to be objectionable without being a Nazi. Calling other people Nazi is one of them. Susan Sarandon knows better, or should, and however much she may dislike the Pope or what he stands for, she owes the Pope, as well as Catholics all over the world, a genuine apology. Oh, please, Rabbi, please, please. An apology for stating the truth. NPR maybe owes this independent producer who produced The World of Opera an apology. Maybe Elliot Abrams and his wife owes an apology. I don't know, Rabbi. Start your list of people who owe apologies. Let me know when you get to the bottom. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.